Tonight, a highly revealing look at how data on social media users, tens of millions of them like you, became a secret weapon in the presidential campaign. A whistleblower tells all. A Friday night firing at the FBI, the agency's former number two, is axed amid new revelations. He kept memos about his interactions with President Trump. The emotional recovery of victims after the deadly bridge collapse in Miami, and new information that officials discussed a crack on the bridge just before the tragedy. He spent almost a year in space. Now researchers say he returned to Earth in an altered state, different now from his identical twin.
This is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. You might not know it, but your personal information, your likes, your online friends, where you work or went to school, even what you post, could very well have been abused in what some are calling the biggest data breach in social media history. A British firm called Cambridge Analytica has been banned from Facebook and is under fire tonight for the way it got information on more than 50 million Americans, all in an effort to sway votes to Republican candidates. Our David Gura has the story.
Cambridge Analytica drilled deep, looking for a trove of social media data on Americans to help Republican presidential campaigns fine-tune their messages and win votes.
We were able to get upwards of 50 million plus Facebook records in the span of a couple months.
In an exclusive television interview with ITN Channel 4 News UK, former company insider Christopher Wiley says Cambridge Analytica obtained much of that data from 50 million Facebook users without their consent.
It's coercive. People don't know that it's being done to them.
The company worked with an academic who was able to grab profiles through a paid survey app that promised personality predictions. Once a user answered questions, the app captured their friends' information, too. It was this technology that caught the eye of Steve Bannon, who was then running Breitbart. Eventually, he became Trump's campaign chief and served as a director of Cambridge Analytica.
Steve wanted weapons for his culture war. That's what he wanted. And we offered him a way to accomplish what he wanted to do, which was change the culture of America.
When Facebook found out that Cambridge Analytica had its hands on user data without permission, Facebook asked the company to delete it. Cambridge Analytica said they did, but today the New York Times reports that is not the case.
The New York Times has viewed a portion of the raw data involved in this breach, so we know it exists, and we have every reason to believe it is still in the hands of Cambridge Analytica, despite their denials.
Facebook suspended Cambridge Analytica and its parent company Friday, a spokesman telling us it's a serious violation, demanding the data be deleted and promising action.
And Jose, Cambridge Analytica says tells NBC News Christopher Wiley is a disgruntled former contractor trying to hurt the company. The company also says the data in question have been destroyed. And while the company's use of this information on American voters allegedly violates Facebook standards, Jose, I want to point out it's unlikely not illegal here in the U.S.
David Gura, thank you so very much. And now to the explosive move by the Justice Department just last night, firing the FBI's former number two, Andrew McCabe. President Trump is praising the decision, but McCabe and his defenders say it's the result of the administration's war with the FBI. And not lost in all of this, the fact that McCabe himself is a witness in the Russia investigation. We get more from our justice correspondent, Pete Williams.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions accepted a recommendation from the FBI itself to fire Andrew McCabe over his decision to let FBI officials talk with a reporter during the presidential campaign about an investigation of the Clinton Foundation. Sessions called that an unauthorized disclosure to the news media and said McCabe lacked candor when asked about it later, including under oath on multiple occasions. The Justice Department says 19 other people were fired from the FBI over the past year for lack of candor.
Sir, I can't comment.
But McCabe says he answered truthfully and approved talking to the reporter to clarify the FBI's role in the Clinton investigation. He says he's being singled out for supporting former FBI Director James Comey after he was fired.
The vast majority of FBI employees enjoyed a deep and positive connection to Director Comey.
McCabe says his firing is part of an unprecedented effort by the administration, driven by the president himself to destroy his reputation and possibly strip him of his pension. Today, McCabe's defenders called for a fund to support him and his family.
The idea that, you know, a president could come and interfere with a discipline decision at the very end, just a couple days before his career is over, is just, I think, a frightening proposition.
So far, the report that led to the FBI's firing recommendation has not been released.
The public needs to see those reasons for the firing. Otherwise, it just looks like trying to suppress a witness that saw the Comey firing last year and is involved in the Russia probe.
President Trump tweeted today that McCabe's firing is a great day for the hardworking men and women of the FBI and called Comey sanctimonious.
And like Comey, Andrew McCabe is an important witness for the Mueller investigation. A person close to McCabe says he kept notes on all his dealings with President Trump. Jose?
P. Williams, thank you very much. And related to all of this, a president's lawyer today called for the Justice Department to end the special counsel's Russia investigation, and that prompted a warning from a top Democrat. Kelly O'Donnell is following it all for us at the White House. Kelly.
Good evening, Jose. Not only did the president celebrate the firing of Andrew McCabe, today one of his personal lawyers said that dismissal should lead to the end of the Russia investigation. John Dowd tells NBC News he's not calling for the firing of special counsel Robert Mueller, but says the official in charge of the investigation, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, should shut it down based on the merits. The White House is not commenting, but a number of Democrats called it an effort to undermine the investigation. Jose?
Kelly, more legal issues for the president of a very different nature. What's the new strategy in the case involving an adult film actress suing the president?
For the first time, Jose, the president has put his own name on new court papers associated with this case. The president is seeking damages of at least $20 million, alleging Stormy Daniels has repeatedly violated a non-disclosure agreement, and he's asking the case be moved from state to federal court. Daniels wants to speak publicly about an affair she claims she had with Trump, which he denies. She says her $130,000 contract to keep quiet is invalid. And today her attorney says the president's new legal action is a bullying tactic. Jose?
Kelly O'Donnell at the White House, thank you. Much more on all of this on Meet the Press tomorrow morning. I'll join Chuck Todd and his guests tomorrow. In Miami today, solemn scenes as more vehicles and more victims were removed from the site of that deadly bridge collapse, including one more car late today. This came as new details emerged about a crack in the bridge that was discussed just before the pedestrian walkway came down on a highway. NBC's Maya Rodriguez has the latest.
Painstaking and painful, a meticulous recovery process is underway near Miami.
It's going to be a long process because the amount of weight and the size of the structure that is laying on top of these vehicles.
This morning, two more vehicles pulled from the rubble. Inside, three victims.
This is already a difficult tragedy. We want to make sure we've been taking a moment of silence every time we recover one of those vehicles.
And now, new details are emerging about possible problems with the bridge before it came down. Late Friday night, the Florida Department of Transportation released a voicemail an employee received from one of the bridge engineers 2 days before the collapse.
I was calling to share with you some information about the FIU pedestrian bridge and some cracking that's been observed on the north end of the span.
He goes on to say the cracks don't appear to be a safety issue. The engineering company, FIG, responded to the release of that voicemail, saying, quote, the evaluation was based on the best available information at that time and indicated that there were no safety issues.
FIG and the company building the bridge met with Florida International University and state transportation officials on Thursday morning, just hours before the bridge collapsed.
Today, the university says the company told them the crack did not compromise the structural integrity of the bridge. For the uncle of 18-year-old Alexa Duran, who died in the collapse, anger that more wasn't done.
Well, I want to see some people say, hey, the buck stops with me. I started this. I'm the one who should have stopped it when I heard about the cracks.
Cracks in a bridge that's now shattered so many families. Maya Rodriguez, NBC News, Miami.
Now to California, where disturbing new video from a county jail shows how a prisoner with schizophrenia was restrained 2 days before he died. NBC's Matt Bradley reports on how the incident is drawing attention to prison conditions for the mentally ill. A warning for you, some of the images are disturbing.
Bound by his jailers, tortured by his own mind, this video, posted yesterday by the San Luis Obispo Tribune, shows Andrew Holland's final 2 days before his death early last year.
We never anticipated that a human being could be treated the way that our son was treated. It was horrendous.
San Luis Obispo County Jail officials said Holland died from a blood clot in his lung. The video shows the 36-year-old hurting himself in solitary confinement, then restrained in a chair for 46 hours, at times sitting in his own waste. Staff visited periodically to move his limbs and offer food and water. After he was finally released, Holland was left writhing on the floor of another cell, where he died in less than an hour. The county gave Holland's family $5 million in damages. In a statement Friday, the sheriff's office called Holland's death heartbreaking. The video, extremely painful to watch. Human Rights Watch says mentally ill prisoners are particularly vulnerable to mistreatment. Now, Holland's parents are devoting themselves to reforming how prisons handle mental illness.
We'd like to put it all behind us, but we don't want to put behind the change and what can come out of his death.
A horrific death. The Holland's hope will give life to many others. Matt Bradley, NBC News.
Voters in Russia tomorrow will elect their next president, and you can bet one thing. His name will be Vladimir Putin. But that is only part of the story of this election. Many young people in Russia, tired of Putin, support a man they can't even vote for. NBC's Keir Simmons explains.
Thousands of protesters gathered in Moscow in January, a massive chorus of opposition to Putin. Putin
won! These people understand that our president is just a thief, a liar, bad man.
Many of those voices, high school and college students, supporters of Alexei Navalny, the first Russian candidate for president to build a truly national campaign to oust Putin.
На самом деле, просто помимо Навального нет других людей, которые могли бы составить конкуренцию Путину.
But Navalny's name won't be on any ballot tomorrow. He was banned from running in the election. The passion for his candidacy now replaced with a symbolic push by supporters to delegitimize the election with a nationwide boycott.
Кандидаты, которые представлены, они не настоящие, в том числе оппозиционные кандидаты, они не являются на самом деле оппозицией президенту Путину.
International observers agree. The outcome is already known. Vladimir Putin will be in power until 2024. But the presidential race continues. Debates held. Candidates like Ksenia Sobchak resign to the inevitable.
Those elections can be only won by Putin. You know, Ksenia always wins. Putin always wins.
But Navalny has called for his supporters to turn out tomorrow, not to vote for someone else, but to observe the polling places.
В день выборов голосовать я не буду, но я буду наблюдать на выборах, чтобы они прошли без фальсификации, чтобы они прошли честно.
They'll be counting voters, hoping to show how Putin skewed the results. An act of opposition in a place where Putin's biggest rival has no chance of winning.
The thing that unites all these people is anxiety about Russian future. What happens if Putin will be re-elected?
Keir Simmons, NBC News.
And there's growing tension between Russia and Britain tonight over the poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in England earlier this month. The British government says it was overwhelmingly likely that Vladimir Putin personally ordered the attack. We get the latest from NBC's Tammy Leitner in London.
Russia strikes back, today ordering 23 British diplomats out of the country. The move, retaliation, after the UK's decision this week to expel 23 Russian diplomats. The feud comes following the poisoning in Britain of a former Russian spy and his daughter, both in critical condition.
There is no alternative conclusion other than that the Russian state was culpable.
Police here now are asking for the public's help to figure out what former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia were doing during a missing four-hour period on the day they were discovered poisoned.
How important is it to establish a timeline?
That will give the authorities here a clue as to how it was administered.
On March 3rd, Yulia Skripal left Russia, landing in London. Over the next 24 hours, she and her father visited several locations in his small town until they were found unconscious on a park bench.
These agents will affect individuals either through being breathed in or being swallowed or coming into contact with the skin. So understanding where the couple were exposed is actually crucial.
Crucial clues in a high-stakes investigation. Tammy Leitner, NBC News, London.
Still ahead tonight, after almost a year in space, an astronaut returns to Earth. A changed man, literally, will explain what happened. We are back with a fascinating look at what spending a long time in space does to the human body. Astronaut Scott Kelly spent almost a year aboard the International Space Station. When researchers compared him with his identical twin brother, they found that some of his DNA had permanently changed. We get more from NBC's Tom Costello.
Scott Kelly back on Mother Earth after 340 days in space, Dan.
2 years after Scott Kelly returned a bit wobbly from a year in space, researchers say he's not quite the identical twin to brother Mark that he was when he left. This could be good news, tweeted Scott. I no longer have to call Mark Kelly my identical twin brother anymore.
I think coming back to gravity is harder than leaving gravity.
In the Kelly twins, NASA researchers had the perfect test and control subjects to study the effects of space exposure. It turns out Scott Kelly experienced tens of thousands of molecular changes. While most of his genes have returned to normal, about 7% haven't, at least not yet. Genes related to keeping the body young, to maintaining the immune system, to DNA repair, and to bone formation.
Based on everything we've seen, we know he's definitely, still a twin, still has a twin brother. He looks like he's overall responded and returned mostly back to regular health, and we have no real concerns other than just keeping an eye on some of these things that we know changed.
Researchers suspect Scott will be just fine, and the changes are similar to what a mountain climber might experience. But in space, Scott did admit to having one big health concern.
The biggest unknown out there is the effect of the radiation environment and, what that effect has long term.
Critical since this week, President Trump again talked of even longer and deeper space missions.
We're looking at Mars. We're going to get there. It's going to move it along pretty good.
The lesson from Scott Kelly's year in space, what goes up doesn't necessarily come back down quite the same. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
And we are back in a moment with a look at how they celebrated on this St. Patrick's Day. The scene on New York's Fifth Avenue today, the city's 257th St. Patrick's Day parade. More than 100,000 people enjoyed the festivities under sunny skies. In the Windy City, another St. Patrick's Day tradition, the dyeing of the Chicago River green. Organizers say the powder used for it is environmentally safe. In Savannah, Georgia, Vice President Mike Pence was among those celebrating that city's big parade. And in London, Prince William and Kate Middleton raised a glass in honor of the Irish Guards. He drank Guinness, she stuck to water. She's pregnant. Perhaps the luck of the Irish will help someone tonight. A huge Powerball jackpot drawing for a prize estimated at $455 million. And here's where the luck comes in. The odds of winning, roughly 1 in 292 million. When we come back, leaving this world in style. Personal touch to honor the memory of the dearly departed. Finally tonight, saying goodbye, the last goodbye, is as much about celebrating a life as it is about death. And with that in mind, we want you to meet a man, he's an artist, who helps families look back as they look to the beyond. Kevin Tibbles spent some time at his workshop in Texas.
It's a fact of life. Sooner or later, we'll all end up in a pine box. Or will we?
Everybody calls me the Louis Vuitton of the casket industry.
Trey Ganim is the casket customizer.
Well, this is what we call our rock star casket.
The man who will send you 6 feet under in style.
It's about representing somebody's life. We're telling their story.
On the casket.
On the casket.
Whether you or your loved one are football fans, music lovers, hot rodders, or proud Texans, Ganim can design a casket that costs somewhere between $2,000 and $4,000, about the same as a regular one.
While you likely aren't going to remember your own funeral, folks here want to leave your friends and family with something to remember you by.
All handcrafted by Trey and his family in tiny Edna, Texas, 2 hours from Houston. And Ganim says he can deliver anywhere in America in about 24 hours. Candace Simmons' grandmother was known as Gammy. Her casket was adorned with memories from a life well lived.
Everybody that knows her saw it, and they could look at it and tell. They knew what every piece of it meant.
Susan Hornstein's dad was a farmer who loved his red tractor. So when he passed on, his final resting bed was bright red.
It's so much more of the way you want to celebrate a life rather than their death.
complete time.
Trey wants to replace some of the mourning with memories.
I'm not a dark person by any means. It's just I'm shining light on something that has never been lit up.
A final resting place that's painted and polished, with special attention paid to the details of a life. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Edna, Texas.
And that's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. On tomorrow's Nightly News with Kate Snow, we'll look at new calls for the Catholic Church to allow priests to get married. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time. Good night.